airs beginning Monday on PBS Independent Lens. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Currently accepting applications for paid six-month internships here in New York. Go to democracynow.org for details. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez, our website, democracynow.org.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is coming up right on 5 o'clock, and we're going to the evening news next. First, I got to tell you that KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Levin & Levine, LLP, attorneys specializing in personal injury law. Levin & Levine offices are located in Southeast Portland and Old Town Sherwood. More information available by phone at 503-948-8708 and online at levinandlevine.com.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Dia de los Muertos on Wednesday, October 30th from 4 to 9 p.m. at Irving Street Studio in Portland. Educata Ya hosts Dia de los Muertos featuring decorative altars, people dressed up as Katrinas, reading of the satirical Calaveras, and a traditional Pan de Muerto. Again, that's Dia de los Muertos on Wednesday, October 30th from 4 to 9 p.m. at Irving Street Studios, 721 Northwest 9th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO is excited to announce that we will be a stop on Southeast Portland's First Friday Art Walk on November 1st from 6 to 9 p.m. We will be filling our studios with beautiful artwork from local artists, great music, and drinks and snacks. Also, get a chance to tour our legendary station. The First Friday Art Walk is in Portland's vibrant East Side Arts District and includes more than 23 galleries. Hop just around the corner to the Art Walk event at the Jupiter Hotel. You can find a map of participating galleries at firstfridaypdx.org. So come out to KBOO in the name of art, music, and drinks. Friday, November 1st from 6 to 9 p.m. See you then!
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, 22 fires pop up in just 24 hours in the Willamette Valley.
A new monster fire threatens the Reagan National Library in California.
And health insurance rates for kids are plummeting.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, October 30th, 2019. I'm Erin J. Bernard.
And I'm Annette Newell. A cold weather advisory is in effect tonight for Multnomah County. The Joint Office of Homeless Services says overnight temperatures will be at or below 32 degrees for at least 4 hours. As a result, a list of warming shelters will be open tonight. They include the Union Gospel Mission on Northwest 3rd Avenue, the YE Shelter on Southeast 122nd, and Portland Rescue Mission on West Burnside Street. Anyone seeking shelter should contact 211 Info by dialing 211 or visiting this website, www.211info.org. The county is asking people to be vigilant, watching out for their neighbors in need.
22 fires have broken out across the Willamette Valley in the last 24 hours. That's according to the Oregon Department of Forestry. ODF is working with partners to contain the fires burning in rural forested areas as near-perfect burn conditions with high winds and low humidity grip the state. They trace most of the fires to prescribed burns rekindled by high winds. In Northwest Oregon, fire crews are fighting two larger fires. They are the 80-acre North Fork Fire, which is 16 miles east of Malala, and the 50-acre Detroit Dam Fire, about 5 miles west of Detroit Lake. While smoke from the fires is visible, there are no road closures or threats to homes or businesses so far. Fire season is over, but blazes this time of year are fairly common, according to forestry officials, because of low humidity, seasonal winds, and dry conditions.
And a fast-moving brush fire that started early today burned its way to about 100 yards from the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library and Museum, forcing evacuations in the area. Police and fire vehicles surrounded the library compound this morning, and helicopters flew overhead, dropping water and fire retardant on the flames. Heavy winds gusting to more than 60 miles an hour tumbled over museum signs weighted with sandbags. The blaze, named the Easy Fire, grew quickly to cover 972 acres, doubling in size in just over an hour. It caused evacuation orders for parts of two communities, Simi Valley and Moore Park, in the southern part of Ventura County. California is facing the worst kind of weather for wildfires today: strong, gusty winds and very low humidity. Officials fear the gusts could blow embers more than a mile away, complicating their efforts to contain new or existing fires.
When children are uninsured, they are more likely to have unmet health needs and lack a usual source of care, hurting their chances to grow into healthy and productive adults. A new report finds serious erosion in child health care coverage over the last several years. The uninsured rate for kids in Oregon is 3.6%. It's 2.7% in Washington and 3.1% in California. Texas had the highest rate in the country at 11.2%, and western states like Nevada, Arizona, Utah, and Nebraska are seeing increases to 8% or more. Eric Galatas reports.
The number of children across the country without health insurance increased by more than 400,000 between 2016 and 2018, and progress made in Nebraska has stalled, according to a new Georgetown University report. Molly McCleary with Nebraska Appleseed says 5.2% of the state's children don't have insurance, and an additional 1,000 Nebraska kids lost coverage during the time covered in the report.
It's really important for children to have coverage. Children who have health insurance and have a usual source of care in their youth have better health outcomes over the course of their life.
Nearly one in five American Indian children in Nebraska are uninsured. McCleary says 88% of kids eligible for coverage are participating in Medicaid and the Children's Health Insurance Program, or CHIP, but she notes that leaves many without regular access to care. The report cites efforts to repeal the Affordable Care Act and cut Medicaid, additional red tape, delays in funding CHIP, and budget cuts to enrollment outreach and advertising as primary causes of lost coverage. In 2016, the same researchers reported the lowest number of uninsured children in a decade, but Joan Alker with Georgetown University says that trend has now reversed. To get back on track, Alker says federal and state leaders need to make children's health a priority.
Start reducing those red tape barriers, start funding more outreach and enrollment efforts so that families know they can get coverage and that how they can get coverage, and they can do it easily.
Alker adds, having just one uninsured family member can lead to medical debt and even bankruptcy. Researchers found the loss of coverage was most pronounced for white and Latino children and suggest a climate of fear may have discouraged immigrant families from enrolling eligible children in Medicaid or CHIP. For Public News Service, I'm Eric Galatas.
Twitter says it is banning all political advertising on its platform. It says social media companies give advertisers an unfair advantage in spreading highly targeted and misleading messages. Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey says, quote, "While internet advertising is incredibly powerful and very effective for commercial advertisers, that power brings significant risks to politics, where it can be used to influence votes to affect the lives of millions." This decision comes after Facebook came under fire after saying it would not be fact-checking political ads, which could allow politicians and others to lie freely. Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg testified before Congress last week that politicians have the right to free speech on Facebook. Critics have called on Facebook to ban all political ads. For her own response, Democratic presidential nominee hopeful Senator Elizabeth Warren ran a Facebook ad which falsely claimed that Zuckerberg had endorsed President Trump for re-election. Facebook's reputation when it comes to the spread of misinformation and exploitation in politics is well known. In the 2016 presidential election, Cambridge Analytica, a conservative political consulting firm, harvested the personal data of millions of people's Facebook profiles without their consent and used it to target political ads.
Healthcare was the topic that leading Democratic presidential candidate Elizabeth Warren talked about today in New Hampshire. Here's part of her explanation of her Medicare for All plan.
I have been an original co-sponsor of Medicare for All. I believe that Medicare for All is the best possible way to make sure everyone gets health care coverage and nobody has to go bankrupt. Every single person who's running for president right now knows that there are millions of people across this country who are struggling to pay medical debts. There are people who file for bankruptcy because they can't pay their medical debt. They also know that Medicare for All is the least expensive way to cover our health care bills. I think it is absolutely crucial that we use Medicare for All as a way to make sure that we get everyone covered.
It was a school teacher, a retired school teacher from Mass, who asked a question about wanting more specifics, and it didn't feel like you gave her any more specifics.
There's a plan coming out that's going to talk about two things. She only asked about one, but what the cost is of Medicare for All and how we can pay for it.
What do you make of the fact that you really are getting a lot of flack for this, for your plan, for how to pay for it, and that sort of thing, especially from your competitors?
Actually, I don't see it as flack. I see it as people who are wrestling with the question of how we make sure that Americans get covered by health care. You know, it's the other side, the Republicans, who think it's just fine for millions of people not to have health care coverage at all, for insurance companies to be able to discriminate against people who have pre-existing conditions, who are right now pursuing a lawsuit so that the entire Affordable Care Act would be repealed. And lots of people, millions of people, would lose their health care coverage. That's not where we are as Democrats. As Democrats, what we're trying to do is make sure that everyone gets it.
Senator, you've been on the campaign trail for 9 months.
I have.
Why have you waited so long to come out with specifics with math that has to do with Medicare for All?
So look, we've had a Medicare for All proposal, I think, for 2 years now that it's been out. I was an original co-sponsor of it, as were some of the other people who are also running for president in addition to Bernie and me. And I continue to work on parts of it that need more information. For me, one of them is about talking about what the cost is. You may know the cost for Medicare for All estimates vary by trillions and trillions of dollars. So I'm going to have a plan to talk about what the cost is, and I'm going to have a plan to talk about how we can pay for it.
That was Democratic presidential candidate Elizabeth Warren answering questions today about her Medicare for All plan.
And as the Democratic Party fields its first serious presidential contender who is openly gay, half of American voters say that they are ready for a gay or lesbian president. But they're split about whether the country as a whole is ready. According to a Political Morning Consult poll of registered voters, 50% say they're definitely or probably ready to have a commander-in-chief who is openly gay. 37% say they're definitely or probably not ready. But voters were more pessimistic about whether they think the country is ready for an openly gay president. 40% say they think the country is ready, and 45% say the country is not ready. This gap grows even wider when voters considered whether their neighbors are ready for a gay president. About a quarter of respondents answered that they are, while 46% say their neighbors are definitely not ready for a gay president. Pluralities of Democrats, Republicans, and Independents all say they do not believe their neighbors are ready for a gay president. The poll reveals a mixed bag of implications for the candidacy of Pete Buttigieg, the only openly gay candidate in the race. The mayor of South Bend, Indiana, began his run as a long shot, but has since shown flashes of being a real contender.
Gordon Sondland might be in more trouble. The Portland hotel owner and U.S. ambassador to the European Union has become a key player in President Trump's Ukraine scandal. Willamette Week and other media outlets report his recent testimony to Congress was incomplete or inaccurate, which is not good when testifying under oath. A U.S. Army officer says Sondland delivered a quid pro quo to the Ukrainians and knew what he was doing. A statement from Colonel Alexander Vindman says in July, Sondland delivered a demand to Ukrainian officials and that National Security Advisor John Bolton and Vindman told Sondland to stop it. Vindman's statement says, quote, Ambassador Sondland started to speak about Ukraine delivering specific investigations in order to secure the meeting with the president, end quote. Vindman says he told Sondland that was inappropriate and that the request to investigate Biden and his son had nothing to do with national security. Vindman's characterization directly contradicts Sondland's testimony that he didn't know the request he was conveying to the Ukrainians had anything to do with Biden.
Not just a quid pro quo, but also a cover-up. That was the big point in Lieutenant Colonel Vindman's testimony in the House. The NSC's top Ukraine expert and one of those listening to Trump's Ukraine conversation, Vindman said the transcript left out crucial words and phrases that he unsuccessfully tried to reinsert. I did not think it was proper to demand that a foreign government investigate a U.S. citizen, and I was worried about the implications for the U.S. government support of Ukraine, Vindman testified. CNN legal analyst Susan Hennessy tweeted, wow, this is just stunningly bad for the White House, a full-on cover-up. Fox News and Trump supporters attacked the loyalty of Vindman, a Ukrainian Jew who immigrated to the U.S. as a child with his family.
Yesterday marked 50 years since the Supreme Court ruled that school districts needed to start desegregating immediately. But historical factors have cemented many forms of discrimination that still happen today. Presidential candidate and U.S. Senator Cory Booker talks about education in this edition of 2020 Talks.
We went from in one generation being the best educators on the planet Earth to now we're attacking public school teachers, defunding our schools, coming up with wacky privatization schemes that are further segregating our schools.
That was New Jersey Senator Cory Booker on the status of public education. Yesterday marked 50 years since the Supreme Court ruled that all school districts in the country had to desegregate immediately. Known as Alexander v. Holmes, the 1969 ruling was to speed up the process the Brown v. Board of Education had started 15 years before, but that many districts resisted. A UCLA civil rights project earlier this year found that school segregation has actually been increasing since the 1990s. University of Iowa professor Colin Gordon recently published a report on patterns of racial disparity in the Midwest for the Iowa Policy Project.
Even though many of the sort of direct forms of segregation and discrimination are no longer legal, you know, since the civil rights revolution of the 1960s, they tend to be sort of cemented in place by the persistence of a wealth gap rooted in housing segregation, for example, or the persistence of educational gaps rooted in residential segregation as well.
Of the eight most segregated cities in the country, six of them are in the Midwest and three are in swing states: Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Detroit, Michigan, and Cleveland, Ohio.
It tends to be treated as a region that's overwhelmingly white, with this white working class, you know, large chunks of which went for Trump. You know, in fact, more African Americans live in the Midwest than live in the Northeast or the West. You know, the African American population is very unevenly distributed across the region.
Iowa's population is over 90% white. State Representative Ruth Ann Gaines is one of the few African-American lawmakers in the legislature.
Last year, there were only four African-Americans in the entire Iowa state legislature, in the Senate as well as in the House, and we formed an African-American caucus. Since then, by special election in Ames, Iowa, Story County, we have elected another African-American.
Gordon's report is largely targeted towards state legislators with specific recommendations.
We need to either make it possible for people who live in neighborhoods of concentrated poverty to leave, because the evidence on the benefits of what we call moving to opportunity, moving to mixed income neighborhoods, are overwhelmingly positive. But we also need to recognize that not everyone can do that, and we need to make investments in those neighborhoods, not just in schools, but in a whole range of public goods, targeting our economic development so that we have recreational opportunities, healthy food in those neighborhoods as well.
From Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Lily Bolke.
President Trump warns us the surge is coming. That's an increased crackdown on crime by police. Speaking at a police chief's conference in Chicago, Trump said, quote, "To help keep you safe, I've made $600 million worth of surplus military equipment available to local law enforcement." The surge will focus on violent crime, targeting gangs and drug traffickers in high-crime cities and dangerous rural areas. Trump's first visit to the Windy City as president brought massive protests from Indivisible Chicago, striking Chicago teachers, and other groups. After the conference, thousands of protesters gathered and marched outside the Trump International Hotel and Tower downtown, where the president attended big money campaign fundraisers. The surge is a term associated with President George W. Bush's 2007 decision to send tens of thousands of troops to Iraq.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael thinks national politics is becoming a whole new ballgame.
Take Trump out to the ball game. Take Trump out to a crowd. There may not be enough Secret Service and police to control the situation. Something's got to give. Someone's going to snap. The master of delusion, diversion, and dishonesty will have to come up with something so over the top, unintended consequences could become the law of the land. California is not the only place burning. Every state has California's potential for disaster, as the corporados have devastated so many landscapes, undercut our public utilities, our emergency and social services throughout this land of the fleeced and home of the bereaved. America, America, wish there was a God to shed some grace on thee and us. We may need more than sister and brotherhood from sea to rising sea, but that creativity, heart, and soul is out there. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
Metro Council President Lynn Peterson may have been violating Oregon's public records law for the last 9 months without even realizing. Willamette Week discovered the issue when it filed a request for transcripts or text conversations between a housing activist and Peterson. In doing so, they found that Peterson conducted county business on her personal phone. That itself doesn't necessarily violate Oregon's public records law, but those texts would be part of the public record, which is defined in the law as, quote, any writing that contains information relating to the conduct of the public's business. Peterson's phone had a default setting which deleted her texts after 30 days, regardless of the conversation. In response, Peterson has changed her phone habits. According to her team, she will now only use her government phone for government business.
Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler asked for help from the Oregon National Guard before the last Proud Boys rally in August, but Governor Kate Brown turned him down. That's according to documents released this week. Governor Brown's advisors worried that the presence of Guard troops could escalate the situation, even if they were only on backup duty.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for News from the Boo, your bi-weekly update on the news inside KBOO. At 6, it's a special public affairs programming. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather, clear sky and blustery winds continue, with gusts up to 28 miles per hour and a low of 30 degrees. Tomorrow, it'll be mostly sunny, with barely a breeze out there and a high of 55. And today in history, on this date in 1838, Oberlin College, just outside of Cleveland, Ohio, became the first American college to admit women students. Our quote of the day is from rock vocalist Grace Slick, who turns 80 today. Happy birthday to her. Through literacy, you can begin to see the universe. Through music, you can reach anybody. Between the two, there is you, unstoppable.
The Federal Reserve cut interest rates today for the third time this year. The decision to lower rates to a range of 1.5% to 1.75% came as a manufacturing slowdown and uncertainty stemming from President Trump's trade war continued to pose risks to the economy. The Fed's vote was not unanimous, with two officials voting against it. They also cut rates in July and September, comparing it to taking out insurance to protect the economy against a future slowdown.
New York City is often a gourmet's paradise with some of the world's most expensive restaurants. But beginning in the year 2022, one of the signature dishes of lavish eating, pâté de foie gras, will be illegal in the city due to a new law. About 1,000 New York City restaurants have foie gras on their menu, as do at least 30 Portland restaurants. It's made from the livers of force-fed ducks or geese, so many believe foie gras is the result of torture. The process requires tubes inserted into a duck's throat for a 20-day feeding regimen, swelling the liver to as much as 10 times the normal size. It can leave ducks too big to walk or even breathe before they're slaughtered. Foie gras is illegal in California, as well as in countries including India, Israel, and Britain.
The 2019 Oregon legislature passed House Bill 2015, which drops the requirement of presenting proof of legal presence in the U.S. to get an Oregon driver's license or ID card. It takes effect January 1st. Less than a week after the Secretary of State rejected a petition to repeal it, the same organizers are trying again. Secretary of State Bev Clarno decided last month that the previous initiative wasn't adequate and did not, quote, comply with constitutional requirements, end quote. A similar bill passed the 2013 legislature but got defeated by voter referendum. House Bill 2015 does not change requirements for real ID-compliant driver licenses, permits, or ID cards, which next October will be required to board aircraft or enter federal buildings or to use a passport. Oregon will start issuing real ID-compliant cards in July of next year. 13 other states and Washington, D.C. do not require proof of legal presence for licenses.
Hearings about the Keystone Pipeline's impact on water in several major rivers are underway, and tribes are also closely involved in planning for climate change. Here's Antonia Gonzalez with those stories and much more in National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Indigenous news, issues, and culture.
South Dakota Water Management Board hearings continue Tuesday to determine if water should be allocated to build the Keystone XL pipeline. Two initial days of hearings took place at the beginning of the month. A witness for TC Energy spent much of the day on the stand agreeing with conclusions of an engineer who has recommended issuing the permit. Toward the end of the day, a witness from the Yankton Sioux Tribe stepped up to testify, as Victoria Wicks reports.
The mission for this day of hearings is limited to water quantity, not quality, and specifically addresses the Cheyenne River. The board will hear testimony on the waters of the Bad River and White River separately. Toward the end of the day, the Yankton Sioux Tribal Historic Preservation Officer is allowed to testify out of turn because he's not available the next day. And being out of turn, Kip Spotted Eagle is able to address water quality, other rivers, public good, and beneficial use. He's under cross by TC Attorney William Taylor when the tribe's attorney, Rebecca Kidder, objects.
Do you know if the federal courts have established the traditional territory of the tribe?
Objection. He's asking for a legal conclusion. He's also asking for information that is irrelevant.
I'm asking a yes or no question.
It's not a yes or no answer.
Spotted Eagle tells Taylor the courts established reservation boundaries, which are very different from the traditional territory of the Seven Council Fires.
My traditional territory goes throughout the whole way, wherever the buffalo roamed, wherever the Catlinite pipe existed, wherever the Siouxian language was spoken.
Spotted Eagle says tribes were not consulted when the pipeline route was established, and he says when considering preservation of cultural resources, water needs to be included as one of them. After this first day of hearings, Board Chairman Jim Huttmacher indicates the aim of finishing testimony by end of day Thursday is probably not realistic. For National Native News, I'm Victoria Wicks in Rapid City, South Dakota.
Wisconsin's Climate Change Task Force will include two members from tribes. The state's governor created the task force, calling climate change a grave threat to health, safety, and the economy. Ben Meyer has more.
Dylan Jennings is on the Tribal Council of the Bad River Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa. He also works at the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission. Jennings says the task force created by Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers will advise the administration on policy, work on reducing the state's carbon footprint, and improve renewable energy.
As a member of one of our tribal communities, you know, we're very proud of our subsistence lifestyle and the way that we live, and it's very much rooted and connected to our environment.
Forest County Potawatomi Attorney General Jeff Crawford will also serve on the task force. In creating the group, Evers said, for too long, we've been ignoring science. Jennings is looking forward to bringing a tribal perspective to discussions.
Our worldview as tribal communities, you know, paired with the traditional knowledge that our communities hold, is an excellent addition to the task force and should provide, you know, a very unique perspective.
The task force will work with the Office of Sustainability and Clean Energy and be chaired by Wisconsin Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes. For National Native News, I'm Ben Meyer in Rhinelander, Wisconsin.
The Durango Herald reports Fort Lewis College is working to give back 51 remains and items to two Colorado tribes. The college reportedly started the repatriation process in the 1990s, but it has been stalled for years. The Southern Ute and the Ute Mountain Ute tribes plan to rebury the remains and cultural items. Officials hope the transfer will happen in the next couple of years. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Portland Community College is joining the Hillsboro Hops baseball team to host their annual Dreamers Breakfast. The event fundraises for scholarships to help the college's undocumented students and support Oregon's first Dreamers Resource Center. The breakfast will feature speakers from the Dreamers Resource Center who will share the impact of scholarships and the center on their education. Dolores Huerta, an American labor leader and civil rights activist who co-founded the National Farm Workers Association with Cesar Chavez, plans to speak at the event on November 13th at PCC's Rock Creek campus. This is a fundraiser for Dreamers Resource Center students to provide financial support to help them succeed in college. All guests will be asked to make a gift to support Dreamer scholarships at PCC. Organizers are aiming to raise $25,000. Since its opening in 2017, the Dreamers Resource Center has provided mentorships, support services, and scholarships for Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program students. The center serves 20 families and 20 students per academic term through the college's community resource hub. It provides legal services, helps with DACA applications and renewal applications, organizes workshops on student support and college navigation resources, and conducts academic and career advising sessions.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, October 30th, 2019. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. You can call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael and Aaron Bernard. The producer is myself, Annette Newell, and our engineer is Althea Billings. The director of Evening News is the hardworking Althea Billings also. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K2A2BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Annette Newell.
And I'm Aaron J. Bernard. Stay tuned for News from the Boo coming up next. Well, good evening. You are listening to News from the Boo, the show here on KBOO Community Radio, where we give you news from inside the station and what's going on and all those fun